tonight, we promised you that we were going to talk about the balance between sadhana and service. So we wanted to look at sadhana bhakti, our practice of devotional service, and discuss, can we be doing too much sadhana, and what would that mean? Can we be doing too little sadhana? What would that mean? Can we be doing not enough service? What would that mean? Can we be doing too much service? What would that mean? So generally, what we find most common problem is that we tend to do more service and less sadhana, because we're more naturally inclined to service than sadhana. If you hear any background sounds, this is live outside, people talking, people working. We're in nature now. A common problem is doing service to the exclusion of sadhana or to the minimization of sadhana. It's more rare that people are overly engaged in sadhana to the exclusion of service, although it does happen. But I think more common general problem for us is we may be overly engaged in service or just overly engaged in life, and sadhana becomes minimized. So one of the things that Prabhupada said in terms of balance, he said a devotee has two duties. One duty is to save himself, and the other duty is to save everyone else. So the importance of sadhana is it's service to ourself. Of course, it's service to our guru, because our guru gives the instructions by which we can become purified. So, but those instructions are really service to ourselves. It's for our own self-purification. So obviously, if we're not purifying ourselves, we're not in a position to save others. So the beginning balance of sadhana is first, primarily, we have to be focused on saving ourselves. Now, of course, we understand the principle that if you help others, that will help you, and that goes without question. But you won't even get to the point of helping others unless you help yourself sufficiently. So they do work together, but the balance begins with saving yourself. Now, in the history of our movement, welcome everyone who are now joining us. In the history of our movement, we've had situations in which devotees were very, very devoted to spreading Krishna consciousness to the point of minimizing their own focus on saving themselves, minimizing their focus on their own sadhana. And one such devotee, it was interesting, Prabhupada wrote him a letter about this, because Prabhupada had taught us the highest service is to save others, the highest service is preaching, and this devotee would preach that, and he would live that, but he would neglect his sadhana. He would willingly neglect his sadhana for service, to help others. So Prabhupada wrote him a letter, and he said, yes, it's true, the highest service is to save others, and that's essential, foundational part of our philosophy. The thing that distinguishes Vaishnavas from other spiritualists, from the jnanis, from the yogis, from the karmis, is the compassion. That we're not just interested in our own salvation. So naturally, this is integral to our philosophy, and naturally we preach this, and we live this. But this devotee lived it to such an extent that he was neglecting his own sadhana. So Prabhupada wrote him a letter and said, yes, the highest service is to save others, but higher is to save yourself. Because it goes back to that point that if you don't save yourself, how are you going to save others? So I've always seen sadhana as two things, as I said, as a service to Srila Prabhupada, who's given us the instruction to follow certain practices, and a service to myself to give me Krishna consciousness. Physician, heal thyself. To feed myself, to feed my soul, to give me the energy and strength so that I can be in a position to serve my spiritual master, so I can have the strength to serve my spiritual master. And also, there's another story. Prabhupada told the story of Bilvamangala Thakur. And Bilvamangala Thakur was born a Brahmin but later fell down. And he was very attached to a girlfriend. And Prabhupada said she was a prostitute, but he said in those days, girlfriend and prostitute, it was the same thing. So he was very attached to her. And one time she told him, he said, look at how attached you are to me. You could be attached to Krishna. in the same, if you were attached to Krishna in the same way, just what a great devotee you would be. Now I completely forgot what I was talking about. We were talking about nurturing yourself, saving yourself. Anyway, I'll remember. So he allowed his spiritual life to go. So he was no longer nurturing himself, so he couldn't help others, because you have to save yourself first before you can save others. So here was a Brahmin, and now he become useless. Oh yeah, I remember what I was saying. So Prabhupada said that his girlfriend, this prostitute, acted like his spiritual master, or his spiritual master had spoken through her. So she was like channeling his spiritual master. So the Prabhupada said, don't make your spiritual master come and save you from a prostitute. So the point that he was making is that your spiritual master gives you instructions, so by which you can become Krishna conscious, by which you can go back to Godhead. So part of your service is to go back to Godhead, is to become purified and go back to Godhead. That's your service to your spiritual master who comes to deliver you. So Prabhupada's saying, don't make your spiritual master come back, or don't make your spiritual master have to come and save you from a prostitute. But, so by executing the instructions of sadhana, it's a service to your guru who gives you those instructions, because it will purify you, and then what happens? You'll become Krishna conscious. That is like, it's like a contract between, you know, we have a contract, you could say, maybe unwritten, that Prabhupada has given us these instructions and we vow to follow them, to be Krishna conscious, or we have a contract with our guru to be Krishna conscious. So that's the idea. So sadhana is not just a very selfish thing, just for myself, but there is a selfish aspect of it, but the selfish aspect is service to Prabhupada, to our guru, and service to others, and also it's service to ourselves. So there is a degree of selfishness in Krishna consciousness, but it's really not selfishness in and of itself. But there, we can't be so much in the mood of giving and serving that we neglect ourselves, because that would be stupid. Because we do have a duty to nurture ourselves, to heal ourselves. That's important. So that's one concept. And then when that is solidified well, the sadhana is solidified well, naturally what comes from that is the desire to give Krishna to others. And one thing, kind of funny thing that I've experienced, is sometimes if you're taking prasadam and something's really good and you're eating it, you'll say to the person next to you, wow, this is really good. So why do you do that? Because anything which is really good, you generally share it with somebody else. Or if you've just heard a nice lecture, you may want to share that with a friend and say, wow, this was a really nice lecture. Or you heard a nice kirtan, or you saw a nice video. You want to share that with others. You want to share what you learned. You want to share what you're experiencing. So that's natural. Similarly, if you're experiencing Krishna consciousness, if you're tasting Krishna consciousness, then sharing it, it's natural. You share it just by who you are. You cannot not share it. It's just who you are. So that's the importance of the relationship between sadhana and giving Krishna consciousness. Again, you can say it sounds self-motivated to say, I want to taste. I want to taste Krishna consciousness. But taste is necessary, and you just have to put taste in its proper perspective. Taste is a necessary aspect that gives us the enthusiasm and gives us the impetus to become Krishna conscious and to share it with others. So taste is important, and we get taste from doing sadhana. And so if we neglect sadhana, we're getting less taste. Naturally, if you're not tasting Krishna consciousness, it's more difficult to share it with others, because you're not excited about it, because you yourself are not tasting it. So, or perhaps we may not be so enthused about doing service if we're not experiencing a lot of energy and enthusiasm from sadhana. So sadhana, everything starts with sadhana. You can't build service without sadhana. And sometimes it seems like that's how we do it. And for some of us, it can seem, or for all of us, sometimes it can seem like, well, I should neglect sadhana, I should minimize it, because that way I can do more service. There was a devotee, he told me a story. Many years ago, he was in charge of the preaching in Israel. And he said that. He kind of understood that if the devotees spent more time studying, then when they went on in Sankirtan, they would be more inspired, and they could do just as much, perhaps more, in less time. So he developed a new program where after breakfast, the devotees stayed back and did a program of study. And they didn't, normally they would go out like, let's say, 10 o'clock, and now they would stay back and study, take lunch, and then they would go out at 1 o'clock. But they came back at the same time. So he said, instead of 7 or 8 hours, they would go out 4 hours. And he said the result of that program was they were doing more in those 4 hours than they were doing previously in their 8 hours, because they were more inspired. So it's an important principle to understand that we have a duty to ourselves, somehow or other, to remain inspired in Krishna consciousness. That's our duty. It's a very important duty. And if we want to expand our service, and if we want to be able to help others, we can do it a little bit, or we can go on for a while without nurturing ourselves or nourishing ourselves as much as we really require. But it's going to run out at a certain point. So everything begins with sadhana. Now, a very interesting thing. One devotee named Lakshmi Moni compiled letters, many, many letters from Srila Prabhupada, in which he said the same thing. So in other words, she has, let's say, 60, 70, 80, 100 letters. They all say the same thing, and she'll read them. It's very good you're doing this, very good you're doing that. Always make sure that you chant 16 rounds and follow the four regulative principles. This is our life and soul. This is how we become Krishna conscious, etc., etc. You know, foundational stuff. She reads the next letter. Prabhupada said, remain in Krishna consciousness. It is very easy. The secret is chant 16 rounds, follow the four regulative principles. Reads the next letter. I'm very happy with your service. Always go on in your Krishna consciousness. And it is not a difficult process. Simply you chant 16 rounds, strictly follow the four regulative principles. So she's going on reading letter after letter after letter like this. And after a while, you understand, okay, this is important. This is foundational. You can't build if you don't have a strong foundation. So, and Prabhupada, knowing that it's very easy for us to get distracted and more absorbed or engaged in service than in sadhana, because sadhana is more difficult. It's something we're not naturally attracted to. Or service, there's so many things we may like doing. So everything begins with sadhana. We should never think that we can build our service, expand it, and over a long term have a positive effect on other people and remain steady and enthused in our service without a strong foundation of sadhana. There's got to be something there. That's important. Now, let's turn it around a little bit. Now, here's an interesting twist to this. Now, Prabhupada said, if you're inspired in your service, you naturally will be inspired in your sadhana. Interesting, isn't it? So what's the context in which Prabhupada spoke of this? Well, what he said was, he'd written a letter to some managers, and he said that you should inspire devotees by challenging them, finding something that will be challenging and finding something that will be absorbing. And so the devotees become very spontaneously absorbed in their service. It's kind of a challenge, Prabhupada was asking his managers to find just like if you really like doing something, let's say you're an artist, and I give you service as an artist, you become very inspired because you like doing it. Or if you're a musician or a writer, whatever it is, if I as a manager engage you that way, you become inspired, and I can even challenge you. Well, let's do something with your skills and your talents. Of course, you can challenge yourself in the same way. It doesn't have to be somebody else. But the principle is challenging, being challenged, and finding something that's very enthusing and satisfying. So this was the idea that Prabhupada was giving to his leaders. And as I'm saying, some devotees find that on their own. They'll discover that within themselves. But the interesting thing is that Prabhupada said, if you do this, then the devotees will be challenged, they'll be absorbed in their service, they'll be happy, they'll be enlivened, And he said, as a result, they'll naturally be inspired to follow their sadhana. So you see there's a balance there between both. That we find if a devotee is not enlivened in their service, often they're not enlivened in their sadhana. Often they find it difficult to perform sadhana if they're not inspired in their service. Perhaps they're doing something which is very much against their nature and they're finding it difficult to be absorbed or difficult to be enthused. And then that shows up in their sadhana. Whereas if they're very inspired in their service, it tends to show up in their sadhana. Another thing that shows up in the sadhana, which energizes the sadhana, is if we're challenged in our service, because then we realize we need strong sadhana to meet the challenges. So we'll pray more in our japa, and we'll be perhaps a little more careful, more strict in our sadhana to get the empowerment. So it's good to be challenged in your service. It's good to try to do something maybe that's a little out of your comfort zone, because it'll cause you to pray more, and it'll cause you to take shelter of your sadhana, because you'll realize that that's really where the strength is going to come. You realize you'll have to deepen your faith more. You require more determination. And that all comes from sadhana. Now, when can service be too much? Service can be too much when we convince ourselves that service is more important than sadhana. Or we convince ourselves because we're successful in our service, we're Krishna conscious, even if it doesn't show up in sadhana. So we should understand that if we're advancing in Krishna consciousness, naturally there'll be attraction to sadhana. So this is a trap that many fall into. They'll say, well, why do I need so much sadhana? I'm successful in my service. I must be okay. It's not like that. Natural symptom of advancing is that there will be attraction for chanting. There will be attraction for rising early. There'll be attraction for reading, for study, for worship, for puja, for sangha, for living in a holy place. These things will be natural. So if these things are not developing, even though we're so-called successful in our service, we should think, okay, something's wrong here. It's not only about service. Service is important, especially if you're given an instruction by your spiritual master to do something personally that he's depending on you to do. That's very important. But still, Prabhupada did not expect that when he gave us an instruction, and neither does any spiritual master expect, when you're given an instruction, that you will neglect your sadhana to fulfill that instruction. Then the spiritual master would think, well, that's a failure. Even though you achieved success in your service, you failed in your sadhana. Now, sometimes in emergencies, in particular situations where one is overworked and one must be overworked to accomplish a job, it's the only way to do it, which is the exception, Prabhupada would allow that. In other rare circumstances where a person is so passionate that they can't sit down and do sadhana, then Prabhupada would allow it, saying, well, what can be done? That's the only way they're going to be engaged in Krishna consciousness, because they don't have sadhana, or they're not attracted. So it could be allowed in some situations, but it's not the norm. Neither would Prabhupada ever encourage that devotee to minimize their sadhana, but at least he would keep them engaged. He wouldn't reject them. Or as I said, sometimes there's certain situations. You're putting on a big festival or there's a big project and there are deadlines. So you may have to neglect your sadhana, but don't allow it to become a permanent action, thinking, well, if I accomplish a lot in my service, then that accounts for, it's okay that I don't need good sadhana. And many devotees have fallen into that trap and have suffered from it. And Prabhupada never set that example. Now, we have some stories of Prabhupada. Prabhupada always went to Bhagavatam class. I don't know if you know that. Wherever he was, they would have Bhagavatam class. Even sometimes he was sick, he would sit in the Bhagavatam class and someone else would speak. But he set that example of attending the class. Every day he would come greet the deities. Then they would have Bhagavatam class and kirtan. He would always attend. So there's a story that at one of the Magh Mela festivals in Allahabad, it was very, very cold. Devotees weren't getting up. And at that time, Prabhupada was sick. And he saw devotees weren't getting up. So he would get up very early in the morning to be with them. He would take a cold shower just because he saw that they weren't getting up. He very much stressed getting up early. So he would even have to set the example of that because it was so important. Stressing, early morning. Now, there are 64 items of bhakti, and 5 items are most important. And within the morning programs that temples have, these five items are covered. And the 5 items are chanting, association, hearing Bhagavatam, deity worship, and living in a holy place. So the temple is the holy place. We have Bhagavatam class, we have japa, we have kirtan, we have deity worship. And then the sangha is there with other devotees. So our sadhana is based on these 5 practices. And Prabhupada stressed, and I don't know if you're aware of this, Prabhupada stressed rising early. Again and again and again and again and again, and after that again and again and again and again. This is an area which is difficult for many devotees. The rising early becomes neglected. Now, if we want some modicum of sadhana, some level, something, we have to rise early for most people, because most people will leave for work early in the morning, or most people are busy taking care of kids or so many things. And without rising early, it becomes difficult. So if we want to advance steadily in Krishna consciousness, it's extremely important to figure out how we're going to do some kind of regulated daily sadhana at the ideal time of the day. And you can go, if you go to Prabhupada's books, if you go to, especially to Prabhupada's letters, he always says rise by 4 o'clock in the morning. Now, funny story, particularly for householders, this is not very, it's not a stringent thing that all, you know, brahmacharis in the temple, they have to rise by 4, mangalartiks at 4:30. But for householders or maybe single people living outside the temple, they're not all so strict. Some are, some aren't. So Prabhupada was with some devotees and he was noticing, particularly the householders were not so strict. So Prabhupada turned to one of the householders and said, why are the householders always in Maya? I mean, can you imagine Prabhupada saying that to you? Why are the householders always in Maya? You know, he couldn't say anything. He didn't know what to say. And the Prabhupada said, jokingly, he said, that is their constitutional position, to always be in Maya. So what he was meaning is we're dealing, you know, dealing with material things, dealing in the material world. There's this tendency to neglect sadhana. And it's very easy to neglect it. It doesn't take much energy to neglect it. So there's a natural tendency. So we have to be conscious of this. We have to make efforts to have some kind of regulation in our lives. Particularly, rising early is extremely important. Because if you rise early, that guarantees you a level, a good level of sadhana. If you can chant your rounds in the morning, if you can read every day before work, it'll have a tremendous effect. The rounds will be better. You'll absorb more reading early in the morning, and it'll give you energy for the day. So this is how devotees living in the temple live their lives. Everything is done in the morning between 4:30 and 8:30 or 9. This is where we get our energy. This is our spiritual vitamin. So if we're not living in a temple, as far as possible, we should emulate it as much as we can. I know devotees who have Mangalarti. They have Tulsi Puja. They have everything. They have a whole morning program. Maybe everyone can't do that. Maybe everyone is not that disciplined. Still, as far as possible, we should try that. So now, Ganapati has a question or a comment. Question. I see a question mark. If the case of doing service, if one apparently fails his guru's expectations, the sadhana then suffers. How does one retrieve his inspiration to do a sadhana? In other words, if you know you have tried your best, but still you feel you have failed at your service, how do you not lose your desire for sadhana? Because you try to learn from it and do better next time. The best apology is better actions in the future. Of course, if you know you've tried your best, and you still failed, then learn what you have to do it better, or ask your guru, well, I failed, how can I do it better? I mean, as long as we want to advance, as long as the spiritual master sees that's your desire, then that's the most important thing. It's always the most important thing, the intention. tension is always the most important thing. Now, materially, we may be qualified or not. That's another thing. For the service of Krishna, we want to become qualified. We want to do things as well as we can, and we want to learn how to do them better. And we should learn how to do them better. And Prabhupada wanted us to be expert, and he said a devotee is expert. So that's natural, but sometimes, and some of, we're all given different talents and skills, but as far as possible, we want to be diligent and improve ourselves in service to our spiritual master. And we shouldn't become discouraged, we should become encouraged to do it better. And we should never think, well, what's the use? I think that was the topic of last week's class. What's the use? You know, I failed, so what's the use? Well, Prabhupada said, and one time he said, you could never repay the spiritual master, so you'll always remain in debt. But at the same time that Prabhupada had high expectations, or still has high expectations for all of us, at the same time he was very pleased with some of the most simple service that the devotees would render, because he would see the attitude. So attitude's important. Attitude is very important. That's most important. And if the attitude is right, then we'll naturally want to become more expert at what we do, and we'll naturally learn how to do it better. Where there's a will, there's a way. So that's, you know, we talked about this before. It's like one time Srila Prabhupada was asked, he said, what pleases you the most? And Prabhupada said, to love Krishna. So the devotee who asked the question was thinking Prabhupada was going to say, what pleases me the most is if you distribute my books, because Prabhupada said that before. And Prabhupada knew that's the answer the devotee wanted to hear, and purposely he didn't give that answer, because he wanted the devotee to know that you can't just please the spiritual master by doing something. You can't think, okay, I'll purchase him because I do it expertly. That's not entirely false, but if that's the mentality, it's not the right mentality. What pleases the spiritual master most is you offer him 16 good rounds a day. You rise early, you do sadhana, that pleases him. At the same time, you do the service, you do your service expertly. If your spiritual master gives you service, you want to do it expertly. So you can't say, well, I've chanted 16 good rounds, it doesn't matter how I do my service. Or you can't say, I've done my service expertly, it doesn't matter that I chant well, that I rise early, that I follow all the principles. It's not like that. But of the two, the most important is the right. This is start with the right attitude. Service is done to please Krishna, to please Guru, to please Prabhupada, to please the Vaishnavas. That's the mode. And then if I really want to please them, I'll do it well. And I'll want to become expert for Krishna. I want to become expert for Prabhupada. I want to become expert for my guru. I want to become expert so I can help other people. That's the idea. So I'll tell you another letter. It's really interesting. Prabhupada particularly as book distribution was expanding in ISKCON, Prabhupada particularly was encouraging book distribution more than anything. He would say, this pleases me the most. If you want to please me, distribute my books. And really enthusing book distribution. So some devotees were feeling maybe left out, or maybe what they were doing was not so encouraging to Prabhupada, or so pleasing to him, or so important. So there was a group of devotees who started a business, and their business was supporting the Gurukul in Los Angeles. And it was a way for householders to make money without having to work outside of the movement. And Prabhupada was never giving them the kind of encouragement that the book distributors were getting. And so one of them wrote a letter and said, you know, we're feeling that we need encouragement in this business. And Prabhupada said, to do this business or to work on this business. And Prabhupada said, the encouragement, you don't need encouragement to do business because that's your nature. You'll naturally do it. You're naturally encouraged. But what you do need encouragement in is your sadhana. So I thought that was very telling, because Prabhupada could see we all have a certain nature, and if we're engaged according to that nature, what happens? It's very easy to overly engage. It's very, very easy to just go on working, become a workaholic. And so Prabhupada said, you know, like if you're doing a service, like Ganapati, you like to write. So you don't really have to be encouraged to write. You'll just write, right? That's what you do. So you might say, well, Mahatma Prabhu, encourage me to write. And I'll say, you're already encouraged. I need to encourage you in your sadhana. That's where you need encouragement. So Prabhupada was saying to them, well, you don't need encouragement in business. You need encouragement in sadhana, because you're already encouraged in business. And that's where you need, so that we need to encourage ourselves. And so it's really one of the weak points that I see for many of us. Now, for devotees living in temples, they have to do sadhana to live there. And they're living in a group, and everybody gets up at 3 or 4 in the morning. So even if you don't want to get up, you'll get up. And everyone's chanting their rounds in the temple. Even if you don't want to, you will. And even if you don't want to go to class, you will, because that's the program. And that's why Sangha is so important, because we become inspired and molded by our association. But when we're living outside of the association of devotees, even if our wife or husband is a devotee, still there's more freedom, and it requires a greater amount of discipline. So it's extremely important that we realize that sadhana is foundational. And we remember how Prabhupada said, we don't need encouragement in our service, we need encouragement more in our sadhana. Of course, Prabhupada encouraged service in so many ways. But the real encouragement we need is our sadhana. Very, very important. Right, and in that, rising early, very, very important. Now, our nature, for most Westerners, is very, we're very used to staying up late, being night owls. But the thing to understand is that when you're practicing Krishna consciousness, you're actually voluntarily adopting a sadhana practice. And sadhana practices are all early morning practices. And so it's just something we have to get our minds around, that if we want to advance in Krishna consciousness, there has to be parameters in our life, and there has to be certain disciplines within our life. And it's just, it's kind of common sense. But it's very easy to get off track and get sidetracked by so many things. So we have to put things in priority, and we don't want to be engaged in so much service that we neglect our sadhana. And that's very, very easy. Well, I have so much to do, so much to do. Don't have so much to do that it eats into your sadhana. We should have a lot to do, that's good, but it shouldn't eat. So we have to have parameters or perimeters within our service and parameters within our sadhana, so we can block out time on a daily basis. The rest of our life should not interfere with our sadhana. We block out time, and this is the time for my cultivation of Krishna consciousness, especially for those who are initiated, especially for those who want to be initiated. This is extremely important. If you're living in a temple and you want to get initiated, generally we say 6 months or a year. Some gurus will even ask their aspiring disciples to wait more than a year to make sure they're actually ready. But if you're living in a temple, part of the condition if you want to get initiated is that you're getting up every morning and attending Mangal Arati. If you're living in a temple, not attending Mangal Arati, not attending programs, sleeping in the morning, you would not get recommended to be initiated. So then, at the same time, why should we allow those living outside to not follow standards that are similar or close as far as possible if they want to be initiated or if they already are initiated? So you say, well, I'm living outside, it's different. No, but it shouldn't be that different. It should be very similar, as far as possible. It should be very similar. Rising early, reading, chanting, kirtan if possible. Now, how do we fail with too much sadhana? I don't think too much sadhana is a problem for most of you, but it can be a problem. Whereas one can become so attached to sadhana that it becomes like an obsession. Like, I have to do all these things. If I don't do all these things, I'll go crazy. I'm asked to do some service early in the morning. If I can't do it, I'll go crazy if I haven't finished my 16 rounds. It can become kind of like a madness, where we become too dependent on it, to the point where maybe we minimize our service. Or we feel we can't serve successfully if our sadhana is interrupted here or there. Of course, it shouldn't be interrupted. But sometimes we have service in the morning, or there are things we have to do. That's important. So we shouldn't be overly attached to sadhana to the point where we're neglecting important service that we could do, or avoiding it entirely. So that can happen, somebody. So I just want to chant 64 rounds a day, and that may take you 8, 10 hours, and you don't have any, and you're not doing anything else. Prabhupada didn't encourage that. Or I just want to read all day. In rare cases, he might allow that if the person could absorb what he's reading and then utilize that knowledge and training in service for preaching, for editing, and so forth. Prabhupada might allow it. But in general, he always wanted to create a balance between service and sadhana. So we have this problem, not so much in ISKCON, but in Gaudiya Math, there were some devotees who just wanted to chant. They didn't want to preach. And Bhaktisiddhanta always encouraged them, no, don't just sit in the temples and chant. Go out and preach. That's the real work. So you may want to chant 64 rounds a day. That's fine. But don't do it at the, and minimize your preaching. That's not really what Prabhupada wants. You can, I mean, maybe that's all you're capable of doing. Maybe you can't preach. Maybe you can't do any other service. Okay, what can we say? But in general, it's not what Prabhupada encouraged, that you would just be doing sadhana all day. And the real work is preaching. So when these questions came up about how much should we read, how much sadhana should we have, when the question came up to Prabhupada, at that time in our movement, we had a morning program and an evening program. So there was a class in the morning, there was a class in the evening. So Prabhupada said, morning and evening, that's sufficient. Whatever free time you have, aside from that, you can read. Now, once a year, we would go to Mayapur, and it was like our retreat, and Prabhupada would invite everyone to Mayapur. Say, come to Mayapur, become rejuvenated. But that wasn't 12 months a year that we were just focused on our sadhana. Mayapur, we focused on our sadhana. We were doing service all year, refreshed, rejuvenated. That was our transcendental recreation. So yes, that's there. But you see how Prabhupada was very balanced with it. It came up once, some devotees were suggesting, well, we should have 5 hours of classes a day. And Prabhupada said, no. We should be going out and spreading Krishna consciousness. A few hours of classes we're having. Some free time you can read. So that's the idea. You can overdose on either side. And as I was saying before, when you overdose on one side, it becomes a rationale for not doing the other side. So let's say I'm doing 64 rounds a day, good sadhana, rising early 2 o'clock, just becoming a scholar, reading a lot. And I say, I'm good. I don't have to do any other service because I have good sadhana. But that was not the way Prabhupada saw it. So he would never allow someone to use sadhana as an excuse, good sadhana as an excuse for not doing service. Never. That wasn't his mood. And as we said, he would never allow anyone the excuse of doing good service so you don't to minimize sadhana. Oh, you've distributed so many books? Okay, you don't need good sadhana. You've opened so many temples? Okay, you can neglect your sadhana. But the trap is that because I'm doing so much service, then I myself think, well, I'm successful, so I don't need so much sadhana. Sadhana is not so important. The service is important. The point is, in Prabhupada's dealing with these issues, oftentimes when he would say, well, when you would ask what's more important, he would say they're both important. So it's just balancing the importance of each. They're both extremely important, and you don't want to minimize one to focus on the other. You want to balance them so they work synergistically, which means they empower one another. And so if you look at the temples and their program, you'll see the way Prabhupada formulated it was sadhana from 4:30 in the morning till 8:30 or 9, service from 9 o'clock on till 5 or 6, and the devotees would come back And then we'd go to the evening arati and have Bhagavad Gita class and read Krishna book. That was the traditional program in the early days. So they had sadhana morning and evening and service during the day. And he would say, service, and he said, 9 to 5 are banking hours. And he said, don't do service in the evening. And now some of us have service preaching in the evening. But what he meant by that is, you do your work during the day, you do your sadhana in the morning, and you do your sadhana in the evening. Don't do it all day. Don't just work from morning till evening. Interesting. I don't know if any of you have ever heard that, but Prabhupada said, 9 to 5 are banking hours. He said, the evening is either for preaching or hearing and chanting. Morning and evening, either for preaching or hearing and chanting. One purport in the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada says, one should not work for more than 8 hours a day, and one should keep one's means of livelihood simple. So that's a balance. Okay, work 8 hours a day, that's a balance. You have time for sadhana. If you're working 13 hours a day, you have very little time for sadhana. It's much more of a challenge. In an ideal world, we would work 8 hours a day or less. We wouldn't work 13 hours like many people have to do. That includes driving, of course, because it doesn't allow enough time for personal cultivation. So these are things to think about. You know, when we talk about service, we can also talk about work. Well, balancing your work or your study, or how we should avoid putting ourselves into situations where we have so much to do that naturally, in order to accomplish our duties, we have to minimize our sadhana. That's a dangerous situation. We should try to avoid it as far as possible. So, yes, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur had a routine, Prabhupada had a routine, and they accomplished a great deal. But you'll always see in the routine of any great devotees, it's always early morning. Oh yes, they stayed up late, but they got up 2 hours later. Early morning is it's sattvic time. So it's very, very important. And so I'm traveling a lot, and this is one defect I see when I'm traveling, is devotees don't get up early. Grihasthas don't get up early. Or they go to bed late. Even they don't go to bed late, they don't get up early. It's very important as a foundation to our Krishna consciousness. Like so many of you out there who are not initiated want to get initiated, right? So don't think, okay, I'm a grihastha, I can just do anything. You know, you want to live as a temple devotee, as quote-unquote temple devotee, as far as possible. And if you go to Prabhupada's letters, you'll see over and over and over again, he's just talking about these basic practices of sadhana: rising early, chanting 16 rounds, following the four regular principles, study my books, go out on Sankirtan. How to be, devotees would write Prabhupada and say, I'm having difficulty. Even sometimes major difficulties. And Prabhupada would write back, chant 16 rounds, read my books, go on the Sankirtan party, follow the four regular principles associated with devotees. It wasn't like he had some new formula, or like, okay, for your particular problem, I'm going to give you a special formula. It wasn't like that. If you really study his letters closely, you'll see that the answers to all the dilemmas, all the problems, all the difficulties, obstacles devotees were facing were basically the same. It's like, here's my program. This is the program I gave you. I gave you my books. I gave you the Sangha. I gave you the deities. I gave you the holy name. So that's the program. Just do that. You know, it's very interesting. If you ever have a chance, if you go, I don't know what, maybe some of you know, maybe probably you know the Vedabase.com, perhaps it is. You can get all of Prabhupada's books, and I just saw an app also. It's called ISKCON, and it has all of Prabhupada's books. But this Vedabase has all Prabhupada's letters. And if you go through his letters, you'll start to see patterns, and the patterns become very clear. And what's very clear? Rise early, follow the principles, read my books, chant. You see it over and over again, and you start to realize that was the medicine that Prabhupada gave. It wasn't like there was some secret There's something new. Okay, Mahatma's giving a class on sadhana. He's got a new message. He's figured it out. There's an esoteric truth there. No, the esoteric truth is get out of bed early in the morning. Chant your rounds, read Prabhupada's books. Everything is there in that process. Worship Krishna, associate with devotees. That's the idea. And so when we're, you know, when a devotee is saying, I'm having difficulty in Krishna consciousness, I say, well, go back. You know, what are you minimizing? Generally, if we're doing these things well, the five main practices, if we're doing them well, we don't have difficulty. It's because we're minimizing them. That's my personal experience. And I think if you look at your own life, when you see you're having difficulty, you'll go back and say, well, I haven't read in a while. Or I haven't been associating nicely with devotees, or my relationships haven't been good, or I haven't been associating at all with devotees. I don't like going to the temple because I see devotees doing things. Oh, and it upsets me. Sadhu Sangha is one of the most important aspects of devotional service. Oh, now I'm not associating with devotees. Oh, the books are too academic. I like reading novels. And you know, so I don't read the Bhagavatam. I don't read the Gita. Okay. Chanting is difficult. I get bored. I only chant a few rounds. You know, as one by one, we minimize things because of rationale or excuses. These five practices, hearing the Bhagavatam, chanting Hare Krishna, worshiping the deity, living in a holy place, associating with devotees. These are the five main practices. And Shastra says they have unlimited power. Yeah, so, you know, you rise by 6:37, you know, you lost some really good time in the morning for chanting. Some really good hours, just powerful hours. For meditation, for focus, before the sun rises, before the day begins, you can go very deep in your Krishna consciousness. And if you do that on a daily basis, you'll notice. You will notice changes, and then you will see that Prabhupada's program works. And then you'll see your service increase. You'll see your inspiration to give Krishna to others increases. You will see that your selfishness decreases. It's just natural. You want to share, you want to give, you want to do more service, you want to help others. Even if you yourself are not a preacher, you want to figure out how you can assist someone else who can bring Krishna to others. It's natural. It's just these are natural things. Now, we're living in Kali Yuga, and Kali Yuga has advanced quite a lot. I think all of us have noticed in the last, particularly last 10 years, 15 years, it's getting very intense. So now, within the culture we live in, with all the influence that comes to us, if we don't have good sadhana, we're like sitting ducks. It's just, we're getting, you know, it's just this, all this stuff is coming in. You're conscious of some of it, you're not conscious of some of it. It's just coming in, filtering in the propaganda. And just by associating with the material environment, associating with materialistic people, even if you don't even talk to them, being around their consciousness, what they're thinking, it's affecting us. It does. It's just the nature of association. If you... Like we live in Alachua. If the devotees weren't in Alachua, I don't think any devotees would want to live there. Because the consciousness of people in Alachua it's not highly spiritually attuned, like you would say that, you know, like there's places in America, for example, where people who are more spiritual are attracted, more conscious, we say. And if you go there, you can feel it. Maybe they're not Krishna conscious, but you can feel it. People are aware. There's more vegetarians, there's more spiritual awareness. Different towns. And there's other places which are just the opposite. And you go there and you feel it. So what people are thinking affects us. You go to the Holy Dham. And you can feel it. It's a different world. So we're in these environments, we're being influenced just by the way people are thinking. We need to take our vitamins. Take our minerals. We need strength to fight the disease that's in the material world. Maya is coming in. She's attacking you at night while you're sleeping, entering your brain with strange thoughts. All day she's trying to attack you. You need your immunization. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. You need your Bhagavatam immunization. You need your Sangha immunization. Sangha is so important. If you just hang out with materialistic people for a few weeks, you'll start thinking like them. This is natural. You want the things they have. you start thinking, I don't have enough. They have a lot. I want to go back to school and get it. I want to get a better job so I can have a swimming pool in my house, like all these people have. It's very contaminating. I'm sure you've all experienced this. And you associate with devotees and you think, I want to be like them. I want to surrender like that. I want to surrender like this one. He's so happy. I'm inspired. So Sangha is extremely important. Bhagavatam, hearing, literature, sound, transcendental sound going in our ear, clarifies our intelligence, strengthens our intelligence. If our intelligence isn't strong, it's very difficult to become Krishna conscious, because Maya's job is to weaken your intelligence, dull it so you can't see what's going on. Then you make the wrong decisions. Deity worship, worshiping the deity, it helps in our cleanliness and our regulation and our purity. So everyone should have a little altar, clean it, put flowers on it, whatever, even if it's just pictures. Offer some incense, offer your food, that's very important. And living in a holy place, well, that's living in a holy place means, as far as possible, visiting a temple. Or going to the holy dham periodically, getting rejuvenated. The Shastra says, each one of these has so much power that even one of these processes can make you completely Krishna conscious. So the program that Prabhupada gave us contains all of these. So it's very, very powerful. And so many problems we have can be solved by strictly adhering to this process. And then our service will expand. And just so don't ever think, because you're successful in your service, you can neglect these things. Even Prabhupada didn't neglect it. He set a very good example to us. So, Sampat Sagar, we're having a class now, so the reason that people are not responding to you is because they're listening to a class. I don't know, maybe someone could tell him that we're having a class now, or we're on a particular topic. I don't know if he's seeing the class, but we're staying focused on a topic, and the chat is meant to focus on the topic at hand now. So maybe after the class is over, maybe some devotees want to stay on, like Carol. I think Carol can help you. If you're willing, Carol, you could stay on after class and speak with Sampat. So, but for now, during the class, we want to focus on the class and make our comments and questions in regard to this topic. So now we have 6 minutes left, so I want to stop. No, it's okay. You didn't know. No problem. So does anyone have any questions or comments on this topic? Or does anyone need clarification? This is extremely important, and the reason I'm bringing this up is because I travel a lot, and in my travels I live with devotees. And I see how devotees live. And this is a huge problem when you're living alone. No disturbance. No problem, Sagar. No problem. We want to help. We want to address your issues, and we'll address it after we finish. We're going to finish at 9, and some of the devotees who are on the chat here will stay on and speak to you. Or you can write me, Mahatma Das, go to mahatmadas.com, and then you can connect with me there if you like. So as I was saying, I get an opportunity to stay with many devotees, live with them, and I grew up in a temple, so I'm very used to rising early. It's in my blood. But nowadays, in Krishna consciousness, people are coming. Many, many devotees are coming who never lived in temples. They're coming, they're married, or they're not married, but they're remaining in their occupations, and they're adding Krishna consciousness. So that sadhana is not deeply rooted in their psyche. And even for those who grew up in temples, when they move outside, it's difficult to maintain. It's so important, so important. I don't know how to make the point how important it is, but as I was saying, if you have the opportunity to get the Vedabase or go online, maybe it's Vedabase, what is it? Does anybody know? Vedabase.com perhaps? Go to Prabhupada's letters, and if you can search, just search sadhana, search rising early, you know. And you get a sense of what Prabhupada was teaching, because Krishna consciousness, it's a practice. Vedabase.net, yeah, all right. Or just Google Vedabase. And so you get this concept, you start to understand, like, and you'll get this, there's a certain way of accomplishing something, whatever it is, you know, playing a musical instrument, learning how to paint, draw, learning mathematics, learning so many skills or sciences. But then as you learn them, you see there's a procedure, and you see when you deviate from that procedure, you get less of a result. It could be in sales. There's a procedure of how to sell things, in relationships, how to deal with people, or in leadership, how to lead, how to manage. So if you look at sadhana in the same way, and you study Prabhupada's teachings, then you'll see it. You'll understand it in that way. You'll see, oh yes, Prabhupada's saying this again and again and again. There's a system there. There's a practice. There's a process. And then it becomes more and more clear to you that I have to do certain things on a regular basis. Maybe not every day, everything, but I have to do these things on a regular basis. And then when I do them, I see, oh, the process is working. Because the idea is that you just can't adjust your mind to be Krishna conscious. You actually have to do processes which purify you and do processes which enable the mercy to come to you, because these processes bring mercy into you, and it's through this mercy that you become uplifted. So you're not actually uplifting yourself, but you're attracting mercy, you're attracting Krishna's guidance from within. So you'll see it's a scientific process, and you'll see that the more you practice it, the more successful you are. And it becomes clear by reading Prabhupada's letters, and then you have an aha moment. You say, oh, now I understand. It's not just haphazard. These things are important, and then you'll start to see that so many of your problems are simply a byproduct of not following the process, because we are trying to recondition ourselves to Krishna consciousness, and the conditioning is strong. And the process is aimed at reconditioning ourselves. So if the process is weak, that means our former conditioning will still play upon us more strongly. And so as we do more sadhana, more carefully, and we do it better, we'll see how we overcome that condition. Now, Carol has something to say. I've been surprised sometimes when going to devotees' homes, there are also many sweet, quiet, humble devotees who aren't necessarily the ones who are the loudest or most seen, but who are dedicated to chanting, to serving their deities, who act accordingly to what they've been taught. They inspire me. Yeah, I think I was just thinking the same thing today, that just the nature of our movement is that certain people are in the limelight, they're in the forefront, but it doesn't mean there aren't so many wonderful devotees, very humble, very dedicated, and in some ways more dedicated than those who are in the limelight, more devotional, it may be. So yeah, that's good. There are, yeah, I know many, as I was saying, I know many devotees who do the whole morning program. They get up 4:30, 4:00, and deities, they do Mangal Aarti, Tulsi Puja, Japa, class, they do everything, and then they go to work. Amazing, huh? Very inspiring. So now, my family's here with me, and Rita Nanavash is here, and they're waiting for me. So it's 9:00. If I have your permission, I would like to end.